Webster's Dictionary defines compliance as the action or fact of complying with a wish or command. This is The Compliance Guide.
The Compliance Guide.
As a healthcare provider or healthcare professional, navigating the muddy waters of compliance can get tricky.
And that's why we're here.
Helping you mitigate risk while increasing your profitability. This is The Compliance Guide. Now, here's your host, Sean Weiss.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to this episode of The Compliance Guy. As always, I want to begin by saying thank you all so much for tuning in, logging on, and just hanging out with us for a little while. It is Tuesday, the 7th of November, 2023, and that means it is time for a hashtag Terry Tuesday episode. I have been battling, like everybody, this time of year where we have crazy changes to the weather, a little bit of a head and chest cold, and anyways, doesn't really matter.
So we'll be muting him every once in a while.
Yes, we will be muting me because my cough is aggravating. So yes. Anyways, we came out of the weekend. I think your Steelers did okay. The Dolphins were over in
Germany.
And playing the Chiefs and did nothing the first half, came back in the third quarter, and it came down to the last minute. And all season long, they've had problems between the center and the quarterback with the snap exchange.
Yeah.
And it was a 4th and 10. Dolphins were moving, had a chance to tie the game up, and the center missnapped the ball. Tua couldn't grab it, fell on it. And that was the end of the game. So
yeah, the Chiefs didn't play very well. You guys had a chance there.
Yeah, Chiefs were terrible in the second half. So, you know, once again, another letdown by the Miami Dolphins, who just can't seem to stay consistent. So they are now 6-2, if I'm not mistaken. So with that said, for those who despise sports, I will stop there and we will move on to what you actually do enjoy, which is talking about coding, billing, and compliance. So I know everybody has, or most of you have received your 2024 American Medical Association current procedural terminology manual, and you're all just so excited about that. But there are a lot of things that have changed in the instruction sections for various chapters, and where telehealth has continued to be a big audit target for commercial payers, for the federal government, it's critical to understand that the AMA is pushing out some new guidance, and you need to be aware as to what that guidance says, but not only what it says, what it actually means. So, Terry, I'm going to mute myself because I feel a cough coming on. So okay. Take it away.
Okay. So one of the things, and Sean's right, the 2024 CPT books are out for those of you like myself that get the professional edition. The updates are in green writing, in green type. So it's kind of easy to find. One thing I noticed that when everybody gets their CPT book, they go right to the codes. Think what are the new codes? Well, I don't. I actually go right to the published guidance, right to the narrative of what language could have changed, what direction could have changed. Because remember, we can't get to any destination without directions. And so we have to go to the Roman numeral section to figure out, okay, in the introduction, what's changed? And it also gives us a reason of why they changed some things, added some things, deleted some things, or revised certain things. So one of the changes, and it's on XVII, which is Roman numeral 17 in your CPT book, and I'm just going to verbatim talk about what it says and then kind of comment on it, because this is really important. And for those of you right now that are struggling to explain to your physicians why they can't or can do something via telehealth, this is perfect. you're going to read this and go, oh my gosh, the seas have parted, the skies have opened, because it really gives some great language and directions on what you can and can't do. We see a lot of abuse with telehealth, and it's so frustrating because I always have providers saying, well, show me where I can't do that. Well, it's a lot of things are common sense. They tell us what we can do, not necessarily what we can't do, unless it is a code that says under the parenthetical section, do not use this code with or code with. So what it says on this page, and it's great, it says audio video, which is the new appendix P, P as in Paul, and audio only appendix T, T as in Terry, and telemedicine services criteria. So it says the following criteria are used by the current procedural terminology healthcare professional advisory committee, say that three times fast. So CPT, HCPAC, and the CPT editorial panel for evaluating inclusion of services in appendix P, which is synchronous audio video, and appendix T, synchronous audio only telemedicine services. And it says to, then people request to be included in these appendices. And so it says any request for inclusion in appendix P and appendix T must satisfy the following criteria. It doesn't say it should satisfy, it says it must, which I like it when they basically say, guess what? If you're not doing this, you can't do it. So it says the totality and quality of the communication of information exchanged between the physician and or qualified healthcare professional, QHP, and the patient during the synchronous telemedicine service must be of an amount and nature that would be sufficient to meet the requirements for the same service if services were to be rendered during an in-person face-to-face interaction. Then in bold and italicized for emphasis, it says and, not or. Always remember, and means keep going. It says, and the evidence supports the benefits of performing the service through telecommunications technology. These benefits may include, but are not limited to, the following. And they give us a bunch of bullet points. So I'll give you some highlights. Facilitate a diagnosis or treatment plan that may reduce complications, decrease diagnostic or therapeutic interventions, decrease hospitalizations, decrease in-person visits to the emergency department, decrease in-person visits to physicians or QHP office offices, including urgent care centers, increase, new word, rapidity of resolution, decrease quantifiable symptoms, reduce recovery time, enhance access to care, such as for rural and vulnerable patients. Again, another bold and, a service is ineligible, and this is a big one. So if this is how you respond to your physicians, a service is ineligible for inclusion in Appendix T without also being requested for inclusion or has current inclusion in Appendix P. So they're saying you can't be an audio only if you didn't qualify first for an audio and video. I love this language. I've read it like six times. My good friend and in our the Compliance Kind Roundtable, Christine Hall, she was also talking to me about it over the weekend. And we just think this is awesome because now we have something to come back to the physicians and say, look, this is what the panel put together. This is what the regulatory advisory board for CPT and AMA put together. And they're the ones that are out there basically saying, you know what, you should be able to do it for everything. And now they're saying, well, not so much. And so the reason Sean and I wanted to bring this to your attention today is because a lot of the low-hanging fruit for telehealth, a lot of the audits, a lot of the work plan OIG situation is because a lot of patients are getting charged for telehealth visits for practices calling them to check in on them. No. Or to call them because they refilled their medication. No. Or they want to give them a test result. We didn't do that prior to the PHE. Why are you doing it now? Now, if it is to, when I talk about the test result, let's say that there is a patient that was supposed to come back into the office to go over their MRI, their CT scans, and their, let's say, stage three cancer, and they're trying to figure out exactly what the plan is, and they couldn't make it into the office. So they schedule an audio and video visit telehealth to get that plan of care, assess the risk, figure out what's going on based on the testing they did. That's different. Because remember, if you go back to the language, it says it has to be something that the communication and information exchange between the physician and the patient must be of the amount and nature that would have been sufficient to meet the requirement for the same service if it was rendered in person. So I think sometimes what's missed with telehealth is that you're not billing a phone call. You're not reporting a, you know, iPad visit. You're giving them that are supposed to be as close to the experience of being in an in-person visit as you possibly can. Otherwise, it doesn't qualify. And Medicare agrees with a lot of things CPT does. And I've seen this language throughout with a lot of Medicare guidance. And remember, for Medicare, and I like to pick on them only because they're the federal government and they can come down on you harsher than anyone. They said, if you're doing audio only at this point, not for new patient, that expired with the PHE. But if you're doing it, you actually have to document why the patient wasn't available for audio and video or to come into the office. So you can't just do it just because the patient calls you up, and that's not always a qualifier either. So I see a lot of providers saying, well, the patient called me so they could get a clarification on the medicine I gave them. Okay, well, there's no charge there. Now, if a patient calls you, there could be a virtual check-in for $12. That's a possibility. That talks about, you know, the patient calling because, let's say, they feel a UTI coming on, urinary tract infection. They haven't been seen for 3 months. They talk to the nurse practitioner. She says, you know, you gave me Augmentin when I was in the office before with this problem. I feel it coming on again. Can you just prescribe that for me? And there's a 5 to 10 minute clinical phone call on that. Medicare allows for that. They say that's, you know, that's fine. That's a 5 to 10 minute, what they call virtual check-in. But that's not a full and complete audio only or audio and video visit. So be careful with what you're trying to do with telehealth. And I'm just going from what Sean and Sean says this a lot, the low hanging fruit, the deliberate ignorance and the invited risk on certain things, it's not worth it. And Sean, I know you're under the weather a little bit, but can you add to this as far as what you see sometimes when practices and providers take these liberties of billing for things that we never billed prior to PHE? And now they're saying, oh, just because we can, we should.
Yeah. Well, you know, look, I always tell people, just because you can doesn't mean you should. And the fact of the matter is this, listen, if all of a sudden, and look, let me preface it by saying the public health emergency has forever changed the way providers will code and how payers will scrutinize those codes. But data is king. And if you have never rendered a service prior to the public health emergency, as many providers hadn't, especially when it comes to telehealth, and then all of a sudden telehealth hits and now you are billing 80%, 85%, 90% of your services for a duration of time, 2 years, 3 years, 4 years, whatever it is, almost exclusively as telehealth services, you're going to create an aberrance. You're going to create some new standards by which the government has grounds to take a closer look under the hood. Once the public health emergency ended, if you continue to engage in billing those services in the same manner that you did during the public health emergency, and you don't have just cause or you don't have justification for doing so, or if you're saying, well, you know, we don't have to actually do X, Y, and Z because that was really for the PHE, I can just do the minimum and I'm okay here, folks. Taking these unnecessary risks and having a flippant attitude about what can and should be documented and performed as part of a telehealth service, folks, you've got to understand the guidelines. Now, I go back to saying what I always say. Guidelines are just that. They are guidelines. They are recommendations. They are things you should consider doing. But they still give the payers the ammunition they need to come back and say, look at your payer participation agreement. you agreed, you attested to the fact that you were going to comply with AMA and CMS or our commercial payer guidance, our medical coverage policies, our local coverage determinations, our national coverage determinations, our local coverage articles. The point that I'm trying to make is we have been in a hyper-aggressive era of audits and investigations and overzealous prosecutions. And the government is just starting to scratch the surface with all of these public health emergency services that providers started to render and bill for, but maybe not necessarily dot the I's and cross the T's when it comes to their documentation. So to Terry's point, you've got to not just simply read excerpts from these changes in the relevant CPT sections, but you have to read all of it and you have to understand it, because sometimes people will read up to the point where they get what they believe is the information they need, omitting the next sentences or failing to read the next sentence, which may actually say, however, you must also blah, 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 blah. So folks,
it's like reading directions, yeah. Or what, you know, you and I unfortunately are old enough where we used to have to use a map to get anywhere, not just our navigation. Yeah. And it's like trying to look on a map where the road wasn't finished, or you missed a left turn. You never know where you're going to end up if you do that. But you know, one thing, Sean, that came to my attention, I wanted to talk to you about too on this, you know, and to our listeners. It didn't even occur to me, because you and I have been in the, I mean, I've been in the industry 35 years now. I know you've been in over 25 years. And what's interesting to me is I've had people come up to me and go, Terry, you've mentioned on my own CodeCast podcast, but also on this one, they said, you know, what did you do prior to PHE? They said, well, I just got my job during the pandemic. So there's people out there that don't know what I mean by that. And so I want to clarify, because I feel bad that I didn't really recognize that there are people that started in healthcare, you know, just because the pandemic lasted so long, you know, just in 2020. So prior to 2020, if you're calling a patient just to give them, you know, routine test results, you didn't charge for that. It's called triage. If you call, you know, you call a patient to verify or to confirm that you gave them their refills, you don't charge for that. To check on a patient, you don't charge for that. And so when I see practices starting to charge for, and I call it frivolous and incidental services, and I say, you didn't do it before the PHE, that's what we're talking about. That there's things that, yes, they are practice expense, but that's been taken into account for the value, the RVUs, relative value units, for many codes. They know there's overhead, there's work value, that physicians, you know, review their charts after and before the fact for a patient. And so, especially on the E&M services, they even say it in the published guidance in Medicare under 30.6.01 or 10, where they talk about, you know, you have to make sure you're not billing anything above and beyond that pre and post work. And they talk about that with the 25 modifier. So I think sometimes we forget that there are also some really new people to healthcare and healthcare professionals and coding and billing and clinical documentation integrity and auditing. And we apologize for not recognizing you. We are so happy that we're finally picking up the, you know, getting people in there, because we have such a shortage. And so just be aware, if you ever look at a record or you ever think, you know, should we really be charging that? We call it the sniff test. Ask your supervisor, ask, you know, somebody that really is in charge that can make authoritative decisions, and let them know why you're questioning it. And feel free to reference the 2024 CPT book. Say, you know, on Roman numeral 17, look what it says. Look what it says the qualifiers are to be included in telemedicine and telehealth visits. And I think the biggest takeaway for that for me, Sean, was the fact, if it doesn't qualify for an audio and video, it doesn't qualify for audio only. I love that.
I agree with you. And I think that makes all the difference in the world.
Yeah. Well,
all right.
I think
any final thoughts?
I think we have a good show today. I think that is going to give some people some thought as they head into the week. And just remember, I think Sean and I will continue to look through the direction and some of the new guidance in CPT and try to bring in, another tidbit each week. I know that on the next roundtable, we may be looking at split shared visits and, we may address it here as well, but always look at your directions first before you get into the coding. Coding is always going to be there. Codes are always going to exist, delete, modify, revise, but directions on how to use the code, you got to start there.
Absolutely. So I will be heading up to Boston tomorrow, Wednesday, the 8th, and I'll be testifying in a big criminal case, and I am looking forward to coming back and being able to talk about this case because it was so fascinating on so many different levels. And what was really neat was my opportunity to engage my very good friends, retired Office of Inspector General, special agents, and SACs, as well as the former senior director of the Unified Program Integrity Contractor, Eric Rubenstein and Matthew Kachansky. So I'm going to see if I can get the guys and maybe the attorney from this trial to come on the podcast once we have the verdict from the jury returned so we could break down the case and talk about all of the things that were standouts for us.
And so, I also wanted to shout out to Eric Rubenstein. Next Tuesday, the 14th, he's got a fraud, waste, and abuse LinkedIn session that's free. So check that out. Go on to LinkedIn and anybody can join.
Yeah, those are always really good. They have a lot of great insight, a lot of great information. And, a lot of folks always ask me, Sean, you always talk about, your understanding of the inner workings of federal government agencies like the Office of Inspector General, et cetera. How is that possible? And the fact is because I've maintained relationships with people like Eric Rubenstein and Matthew Kachansky and Jason Eisengrein and former prosecutors like Colin Callahan and Ron Chapman and Robert Lyles, these absolutely brilliant people who have sat down and educated me over the years on how these investigations are done, how prosecutors actually create, their mindset on what they're going to prosecute. So again, to Terry's point, take a listen to Eric Rubenstein and the Advise webinar that they have coming up next week on LinkedIn. And hope you enjoy it. So listen, I'll be out the rest of the week, so there are no other Compliance Guy podcasts this week. So until next week, when we get a chance to reconvene the Monday Coding and Compliance Roundtable, remember, be good to yourself, but more importantly, y'all be good to each other. And thanks again, Terry, for being on the program as always.
Yep.
You've been listening to The Compliance Guy. Sean has been doing this for 28 years. He holds 10 national board certifications. He's a partner and the vice president of compliance for Doctors Management, LLC. He's a subject matter expert in federal court. He's lectured at the most prestigious institutions. He's engaged with members of Congress in both chambers. So what we're saying is he's qualified? We hope you've enjoyed the show. Make sure to like, rate, and review. And we'll be back soon. But in the meantime, you can find us on social media at The Compliance Guy. See you next time on The Compliance Guy.